Prometheus Bound by Dornish Viper, read by Jax Longcoat, a Death Note fanfic. Tags include gore, cannibalism, dreams, implied disordered eating. You wake up in a familiar room. The first thing you see is the darkness, cut by the pale glow of the moonlight streaming in through the window. The air conditioning hums in concerto with the even, steady breaths coming from the other side of the bed. There's a chain digging into your wrist, connecting you to the source of the breathing, who sits impassively staring at the dim light of his laptop screen. You know this scene. It knows you. "You're awake again," he says, in that frustrating monotone. "Are you?" You prop yourself up on your elbows and look at him, messy black hair falling over his pale face. Why does it feel like looking at him stings your eyes? It feels like there's something looming vaguely at the edge of your consciousness, just shy of your grasp, the itch of a half-forgotten memory. You comb your hands through your hair, hoping to get it in order, and feel the chain rattling on your wrist. "What time is it?" you ask, disorientation evident in your hollow voice. He looks at you then. His eyes are like black holes in the night. No light escapes them. It's impossible to look away. He ignores your question. "Are you hungry, light?" You weren't before, but your stomach rumbles loudly as soon as he speaks. You feel your cheeks heat up with embarrassment and feel grateful for the darkness. His eyes seem to scan you, toes to scalp, and you both sit in silence, with only steady breaths and the whirring of the air conditioner for company. Your mind chases itself in circles for the right answer, for a way to deny it, while he watches you. An inexplicable lump forms in your throat. Slowly, you nod, unhappy to concede. "I suppose I am. Are you?" "I am, but not as much as you are." He shuts his laptop and slides it carelessly onto the nightstand before standing from the bed. He tugs on your chain and it feels degrading, something like rage tingles and boils at the base of your throat. But you still can't stop yourself from following the demands of the chain, something in you desperately wants to follow. Your feet already know the way from the bed to a table that's been carefully set for you. You don't know who did it or when. You don't sit yet, you know not to. Instead, you wait for him to sit first, crouched and looking out of place in the expensive wooden chair, and only then do you step towards him, one foot in front of the other, again and again and again until you're standing between him and the table, looming over him with your legs placed squarely between his, not quite touching. He looks up at you, head cocked slightly to the side. A melancholic feeling licks at the base of your spine. "What is it, Ryuzaki?" "I was just thinking about some of today's victims. There were three from El Salvador." "Kira, the case. That's right. How could you forget?" "What about them?" you ask, as if you knew all along what he was talking about. Your voice is measured, even, so precisely under your control that no one could ever doubt your memory. He absentmindedly reaches behind you to grab a sharp knife from the table. He looks at it for a moment, a silver thing with fine white details glistening against a black hilt. It fits in his palms in a way that it pains you to admit is rather beautiful. He twirls it in his hands until the moonlight hits the blade at just the right angle to get it to reflect on your face. You cringe away from the light and huff in frustration. When you look back at him, he's holding the knife steady in his hands and looking up at your eyes, eerie and unblinking. You swallow. "Henry Hovel, 45 years old, suspected of violent theft." You lick your lips. "Rafael Castellon, 53 years old, suspected of criminal conspiracy." Your stomach rumbles. "Rosa Aviles, 76 years old, suspected of drug trafficking." Oh, you're hungry. There's no way for you to restrain it, no matter how much you want to. You reach for his hand and, as if in a coordinated dance, he hands you the knife. The chain that binds you together flutters with the motions, ringing out in a funerary hymn. "You know what to do by now," he says, as you grip the hilt with unshakable confidence. "Of course you know, don't you? It's the same every time. You need to eat." Your breathing labors as you drive the tip of the knife nearer and nearer to his gray shirt. Slowly, and so very carefully, you let the tip rest against the top of his abdomen, at the mouth of his stomach where you can still feel his ribcage. Your eyes trail upwards, sternum to neck, into those deep, horrible eyes. Looking at them feels like choking as the lump in your throat pulses and your mouth starts to water, unbidden. Light. He puts his hand on yours and drives the knife into his abdominal cavity. You gasp, unable to help yourself at the shock of cold that hits your entire body. His hand is freezing, but his abdomen is even colder. For the first time in the night, you notice that even though his breathing has filled the silence of the room, there is no heartbeat to accompany it. You shiver as the cold spreads from your fingertips where he's touching your hand, out and into the very bones of you. You try to get your breathing under control, but you can't. You're panting as you continue to slide the knife down and cut him open. You're midway down his abdomen before you realize he's screaming and you're sweating. It's enough, you think. No, you know, somehow, that this is all you need to cut. The knife clatters to the ground, and you take in the sight of his blood, black in the moonlight as it stains his shirt, the chair, the floor, your fingertips. He's stopped screaming now. His breaths have settled into shallow, pained panting. He hasn't let go of your hand for a moment. "Light," he says again, voice rough. You reach into him. Your right hand slides under his skin, into the ice-cold depths of his body, so cold that your fingertips begin to ache the same way your throat does, and he groans in response. He lets go of your hand, letting his drop limply and uselessly to his side. You know what you're looking for. It's the same every time. Your hand finds its way underneath his ribcage to feel at the smooth half-moon expanse of his liver. You stroke the smaller, flatter left lobe, then move across the middle hepatic vein to caress the right lobe. He shivers and twitches involuntarily around your hand as you wrap your fingers delicately around the meat of his quadrate and caudate lobes and pull. It takes effort to rip his liver from his body. Your muscles work and harden, and you feel sweat beating on your forehead. It's not a good look, you know, so your cheeks go hot from both the effort and the shame. Finally, after pulling and tugging, you feel the liver come loose and untangle itself from his viscera. Then, it's easy to pull it out from underneath his ribs. As you stumble back into the chair that's laid out for you at the table, long, pale fingers delicately set a plate in front of you, and you notice that they're dripping black onto the tablecloth, leaving a fingerprint stain on the white porcelain. You look up at his eyes, impassive and unreadable as ever. You have to eat your food, Light. There's something mischievous on his tongue. You want to deny it, your hunger. You want to tame it, but you can't. Your body knows these motions, so without your permission, your hands drop his liver on the fine china that has been so carefully placed in front of you. Your stomach lurches from the smell, yet you can't keep your mouth from salivating. Your stomach has become a void, ready to consume and consume and consume. He looks at you with expectant eyes. You look down and, "I don't have any cutlery to eat it with." He only smiles, that infuriating, taunting curl of the lips that you never grew fond of. It hurts to look at. You forget you are an animal, Light. You think his voice reverberates in the darkness, but it's difficult to hear over the blood rushing in your ears. You bite your lip. He's still looking at you, and slowly he nods. You swallow. You imagine that a human liver would be red under a candlelight, but with only the glow of the moon behind you, it glimmers black. You make your fingers move, slowly, surely, to the lump of human meat in front of you. It's still coated in his blood, but you have no issue grabbing it and bringing it slowly to your lips. It's not tough. If anything, the texture is more like jelly, but its bitter flavor invades your mouth like a parasite and makes its way down your throat and to the very core of you. It should make you want to vomit, but all you can do is keep ripping off pieces, chewing and swallowing them down with fervor. Your body is acting of its own accord now. There's no control on the way your eyes flutter closed and your fingers clench desperately at the meat in your hands. You bite, you savor, you swallow, and then you bite again. You groan in pleasure as the meat of El fills your mouth, as the nutrients in his body become yours and soothe the painful lump in your throat as you continue to swallow him. You feel cold again, feel yourself begin to shiver and sweat, yet you don't, can't stop eating. His eyes never stop watching you, your throat as it bobs when you swallow, the movement of your lips around the meat, the harsh way your teeth tear into it. You're dirty now, hands and mouth and chin all stained with his blood. It repulses you, and yet you feel better than you have since you awoke. When you finally swallow the very last piece of his liver, you find his black eyes. He's smiling again, and you shiver involuntarily. Until next time. Light woke up to the soft glow of the morning streaming in through the headquarter windows and the jarring noise of the door slamming behind Matsuda as he trailed into the room. "Sorry, Light, I didn't realize you stayed here last night," he said, voice meek and sheepish. Light blinked a few times, quickly getting his thoughts in order. "It's all right, don't worry about it." "Okay," Matsuda said, with a dim smile on his face. "Well, I was actually just grabbing my wallet. Mogi, Aisawa, and I are grabbing breakfast downstairs, if you want to come." Light's face softened of its own accord, the placid smile a learned response from long ago. "That's all right, Matsuda. I'm not hungry right now. I'm just going to finish up a few things here and grab something later." Matsuda nodded and smiled at him in response, before quickly filing out of the room. When the door closed, Light instantly felt something uncoil in himself. His shoulders dropped, his jaw unclenched, and his stomach rumbled. He quickly got his body back in line as he forced his eyes to focus on the screen of his cell phone to check on Mikami, and then on his laptop to get back to work. If he were a lesser man, he might have wondered what it would be like not to live a double life. But he was not a lesser man. Lesser men did not fix the world. Light Yagami managed to tame the soft, weak animal of his body into a shape fit for the annals of history, poised towards the future. And if he felt the hunger gnawing a pit into his gut, he simply ignored it. The End. Written work posted March 2024, audio recorded January 2026. Thanks for listening.